Well, good good Friday afternoon, everybody. Hello, Stan from far away. This is Andy Titelman, Vicky Lightcap, and Stan Casaccio with Don't Back Down. How you doing, Stan?
Yeah, I was just going to say, welcome to the Don't Back Down show. Beautiful day after tornadoes and all kind of stuff hit our town. You know, poor neighbors' houses are lost and branches down, and it was kind of a scary evening. But anyhow, welcome to the show. We have a great show because we're kind of following up with the end of the show last time with Joanne and Don about the COVID and the masks and some of the mandates or lack of mandate that the governor's talking about. So our show today is all things COVID. And what we really want to do is kind of take this show in a way to stop the BS that's out there. There's so much stuff that's out there that we don't that they're playing politics with. Mm-hmm. I want to go into a very kind of, as I said on the last show, a very kind of Sherlock Holmesian travel through the virus, what it is. What the treatments are, what the symptoms are, what you can expect and everything else. And we've got two great people to talk about it. We've got Dr. Robert Civitz and his wife, Lorraine, excellent medical people, and we're going to get to them. However, this is really important. I don't know if you saw this on the CNN report last night. Did you know CNN reported that John Travolta was hospitalized for suspected COVID?
Oh, no.
But then the doc, yeah. But then they realized it was only a Saturday night fever and he's going to be staying alive.
You mean
there's no drum roll from the...
No, Stan, you have a new, we have a new producer and we didn't cue up the drum roll for you today.
Oh, my God. Well, I'll have to catch
they
up.
They must have applied a little grease.
There we go.
But hold on a minute. You know, the new secretary, Surgeon General of the United States just came out with a new self-testing COVID kit. I don't know if you heard about
this. Oh,
no. It's really very simple. Yeah. What you do is you pour a glass of wine and smell it. If you can smell it and then taste it, then you don't have COVID.
Sounds like my kind of test.
Better than the PCR.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. It's probably more accurate than the PCR.
You bet.
Yeah, and probably you'll feel a hell of a lot better after a couple of taste tests on top of everything else.
Really?
And then, of course, they...
there we go. He's getting it. That was a wah-wah-wah, though. Wrong. We need the wah-wah-wah for that. Yeah.
But wait a minute. Well, I'm not done yet. After hours and hours of testing, they determine that between being a vegan and having COVID, the difference is that with COVID, the loss of taste is only temporary. And of course, the World Health Organization, and this announcement just came out, and this was on MSNBC this morning, and my eyes just popped up when I heard this. The World Health Organization, better known as WHO, announced that dogs cannot contact COVID-19. So therefore, all dogs previously held in quarantine are now released. So, to be clear, who let the dogs out?
Oh, God, it was hysterical.
I just want to say something. Stan is an example of what happens after you get the third vaccine shot.
But I'm not done yet.
Go, Stan, go.
He got a fourth one. Oh, no.
I got the couple there. And you know, by this time now, most of the world has had COVID-19. But I just want you to let you know that the people in Wuhan got it right off the bat. And the one other thing that I have
we
to
We just lost
that,
Vicky. She's literally out of control. I can't believe what I'm watching.
Hold on, wait a minute, but I'm not done yet. My prediction is that the COVID virus won't last more than a year, and you know why?
Why?
It's made
in China.
That's good.
And then, of course, I've got a ton of jokes, a lot more COVID jokes, but 99.26% of you won't get it. So just to let you know.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
We're going to a commercial break for a clothing change.
I know my stomach is hurting. My eyes are tearing. Oh my God, Stan! Oh,
Stan, that had to be your best role ever since I've been doing this with you.
But
by the way, I have to go outside and talk my wife off the balcony right now because she's ready to jump.
I got it.
Today's show is really important because we know there's a lot of fear mongering going out there, and we know, you know, and we've had politicians say, never let a good crisis go to waste. And clearly there's politics involved in this thing. You're getting these different messages. Doctors with tremendous credentials are opposite from these other talking heads and stuff like that. And you just don't know what to believe. So what I would like to attempt to do between all of us on this show, and I'll let Vicky talk about Lorraine and Dr. Civic's their background and everything, is to kind of go through a couple of things. Number one, what is COVID? The symptoms, the therapeutics, are there any? Are they safe? The treatments, and after you have COVID, will you continually test positive for it? Do masks work? If you had COVID, does antibodies protect you, and for how long? Is the vaccine a long-term or short-term prevention mechanism? What lasts longer, the vaccine or natural antibodies? And then what is the real death count for COVID? What's happened to the 60,000 people, the 80,000 people who die from regular flu each year? We never hear about that. And then what happened to the people who died of cancer, which is like 500,000 or more people die of cancer every year, and the 600,000 people who died from heart disease? And where can we go to get unadulterated facts? So these are the questions that I think are very logical, that are we're trying not to paint them in any political content at all, but just the facts, ma'am. And that's where I'd like to go. So, Vicky, why don't you talk about Lorraine and Dr. Bob and Andy fill in so people know where we're coming from.
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, Stan, it's really hard to follow you after those jokes today. Amazing. I'm like dying here. I'm still wiping the tears out of my eyes. But we are so lucky to have.
I wanted a lot of people are asking me to replay Biden's lessons, so we might have to do Biden's lessons again. So anyhow.
We'll save that for
Please
the next
do.
Show. That was really good because I think he gave us a couple extra ones this week. So. But I would like to welcome to the show Robert Silvitz and his beautiful wife, Lorraine. And I got to tell you, between the two of them, it is absolutely amazing the background that these people have. And it is so wonderful that we can bring you to the show and actually have people who are educated, who have been studying, who know what this is all about. Let's talk about Dr. Silvitz first. His prestigious background is phenomenal. He graduated from Boston University in a six-year medical program in 1989. Sorry, have to put that in there just so that they know that you've been doing this for a very, very long time. With a degree... Doctor of Medicine, he received his Doctor of Medicine degree and has a BA in Computer Science and Medical Sciences. And he spent the next several years implementing medical software for large integrated healthcare systems. And then it goes on for pages, so much of the information. So you can touch on and welcome to the show, Dr. Silvitz.
Thanks. Just call me Dr. Bob. That's what everybody calls me. I've been around the block a few times. I have the gray hairs to prove it. Started out, basically, I didn't like how medicine was going. So when I graduated, I said, sayonara, guys. I'm heading down a different path. And so I went everywhere else other than core medicine. And then just like in The Godfather, I couldn't escape. They sucked me back in. make a long story short, first, yeah, I did a lot of computerized medical record systems if you're in the greater San Diego area.
Oh.
Yours truly. As far as other things, ended up doing a system to find weapons of mass destruction from orbit when we got caught with our pants down on the Pakistani nuclear explosion so many moons ago in the 90s. In fact, that system eventually became part of our standard stuff for Navy SEALs and other such teams. In fact, there was a funny conversation with one Navy SEAL where he started with the usual, you know, if I tell you I have to kill you, then I told him what he was doing. And he just sat there dumbfounded that anybody would know. And he said, how do you know? Because I didn't have a classified clearance. And I look at him, I said, I wrote the damn system. So it's been interesting for these last 30 years. Got sucked back in the 2000s back into medicine, and along the way worked a lot in cancer care. And finally, after 16 years, a device that I worked on a long time ago finally got FDA breakthrough device status. So that tells you how bad our system is, because at the time I left, it should have been a year to approval, and that was 17 years ago. So, you know, we're behind the eight ball, folks.
And somewhere along the line, you married this beautiful woman named Lorraine, who also brings such very high credentials to the table also. She received her BFA from NYU Film School, which I found that intriguing when I was reading your bio.
She's not brainwashed. I know her. I can tell you for a fact she's right thinking.
And then,
yes, that's true.
And so tell us how you got hooked up with this man and all the science that's behind all of
it's
you.
It's very personal.
Come on.
We need a three-hour show for that, by the way.
First of all, it's great to be here. Thank you for having us. My husband and I met in 2013, and I jokingly say PTSD brought us together because I had gotten my degree at NYU Graduate School of Social Work in 2005. I come from a family of psychiatrists and psychologists, and my dad urged me to get into it knowing I had a gift, calling it a genetic defect. And I said, yes, I need to do this, because at the time I was probably dating patients and needed to turn my my attention in a better direction and just treat patients, never date them. In New York City, that's where I lived most of my life. It was easy to find them. But nonetheless, my point being is I met my husband in 2013 because I was looking for an intervention. I had started a foundation for military vets and service members, because they were some of the first patients I ever worked with when I got out of school. I was working under my uncle, who was chair of NYU psychiatry for 30 years. He was one of the longest standing chairs in psychiatry in the country. And I worked with him at NYU, and I was treating veterans. And I saw that most of them were being treated wrongly, because they were getting addicted to most of the drugs they were being put on. So I became very passionate about finding non-invasive, meaning non-medication treatments for the veterans. And so I looked into, first of all, transcranial, cranial stimulation that was helpful. It was a Fisher-Wallace device, and I eventually got even recommended transcendental meditation. Then learned about, more importantly, an individualized protocol called TMS that my husband was working on the West Coast. So I went out at that time in 2013 with colleagues of mine to learn about the innovative protocol, and we fell in love with the protocol, and then my husband and I also fell in love personally. And so we then went on to become a treatment team, and we brought the intervention east. I had found investors to bring us east to Virginia, and we, through my foundation, we've donated treatment to at least 100 veterans and service members, and we're continuing to raise funds to continue doing same. So that's how we met, that's how we fell in love, and that's how we became a treatment team.
So now our listeners can understand that bringing you to the table is why we needed to have you, so that we could talk about COVID and lay it out there.
And by the way, one time, sometime soon, we're going to have to do a show about this treatment modality that they have. But I think, Doc, let's start off with what COVID isn't. It isn't really deadly, is it?
It's definitely not the plague, all right? There's this funny idea from the fear porn that's been generated that, you know, people are dropping like flies. If you take the average person on the street and you say, how many died from COVID? They'll say 3 or 4 million. Okay, that shocked me, okay? There's no possible way that it could ever be that high, except because of the fact that they said so, all right? And reality is, it's probably not even the 660,000. Because just as we had the phenomenon of driving while black back in the day where, you know, they used to stop black drivers that never committed a single driving offense, okay, we have a different kind of offense, which is dying while PCR positive, okay? And the reality is these people that died didn't have COVID, okay? They had something else. They tested positive for COVID, and they were marked down as a COVID death. But you know, how many people really had clinical COVID? Not many.
But let me ask you this question. Exactly what is COVID? They talk about this malaria kind of based thing. So let's break it down into its simplest form.
Let's break it down into its simplest form. COVID is a worse version of the common cold. That's it. Coronavirus gives the sniff, which is basically what this is, gives the sniffles to about 10% of everybody who has a cold, as we commonly talk about it, during any normal year.
So the symptoms are COVID is very similar to the common cold, a little worse version. You're going to have symptoms. You're going to have the sniffles. How about sore throat? Coughing,
you're going to have the sore throat. You're going to have the runny eyes. You're going to have a fever. COVID is a little different in the sense that it nails your sense of smell. Usually, but not always, there might be a bout of diarrhea beforehand. But that's about it. Okay, that's what normally happens for the vast majority of people who get COVID.
And it's recovered.
And you basically you get sick in 3 to 5 days. It will last about 10, and for some folks, you might be down for 3 weeks if the case is more severe.
So, what is the recovery rate of this?
Oh, the recovery rate is fantastic. I'm going to have my Dr. Ioannidis out of Stanford, who is absolutely brilliant. Okay. Basically went about calculating what the survival rate for the various age groups is, and he has a preprint out right now, and we lifted the numbers from it yesterday. Go ahead, dear.
Okay, the infection survival rate from 0 to 19 is 99.9973%. Then age 20 to 29, 99.986%. Ages 30 to 39 is 99.969%. I will jump to 50 to 59, where it's 99.73%. And then by 70 plus, it's 97.6% survival rate. So clearly, this is not a high fatality rate at any age.
Yes, this is not the bubonic plague. People are not dropping like flies. This is why this last winter, oh my God, all these hospitals, they're being overwhelmed. Well, the reality is I could find only 3 hospitals that were being overwhelmed. One was in New York, one was in Chicago, and one was in El Paso, Texas, because they had a surge from across the border. And then something weird happened in Michigan, but something always happens weird in Michigan.
Well, look at their governor.
So let me ask you this, doctor. So when the symptoms get to the point where people are in the hospital on ventilators and everything else, what causes that reaction, which is the, you know, the most dangerous situation that occurs. How do people transition into that and that aspect of it?
Okay, so for a small group of people, okay, which is probably 5% of everybody that's infected, all right, they're going to get sicker and sicker, but they get sick in a way that's different from influenza. It's almost like it's high altitude sickness. Their ability to process oxygen starts to drop. And this is, of course, very dangerous. You need oxygen to breathe and to live. So that's why I'm always saying, you know, use the pulse oximeter, which is a nice little application on most smartphones, and you can take a look exactly at what's going on with your oxygen saturation. So what happens is they start to lose this ability to process oxygen. And then on top of that, they're going to develop lung symptoms very similar to pneumonia. The findings on the chest x-ray will look like shards of glass. And last but not least, they might develop something. They're going to start developing clots in their blood system, in their bloodstream. And so this trifecta of symptoms is what does people in and eventually lands them on a ventilator in the hospital. Normally, we just try to provide supportive care in the hospital right now, and that's a mistake. We should be much more aggressive doing things. We can discuss that later. But in the meantime, that's what happens. And the easiest way to know if that's happening to you is just download an app for your smartphone. It's called the Pulse Oximeter. And you just put your finger on the little red light, and it will tell you where your oxygen saturation is. If you see it at 90 or below, off to the hospital you need to go.
So I'd like to break in for a second and invite the audience to call in with any questions they have about COVID or what they can do to maybe avoid getting infected, or if they start feeling the symptoms, what they can do early on. The call-in number is 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. And you're listening to Don't Back Down with Stan Casaccio, Vicki Lightcap, and today, me, Andy Teitelman. Our guests are Dr. Robert Silvitz and Lorraine Silvitz, MSW, and we're talking about all things COVID. So, Doc, I have a question for you. I know myself, I'm on a regimen of vitamin D, vitamin C, quercetin, and zinc that I take every single day. What impact can doing something simple like that, an over-the-counter preventive or healthcare sort of an approach, you know, personal healthcare sort of approach, have on either not getting this infection or if you do get it, maybe minimizing it?
It's more of the latter than the former. You certainly can't avoid a virus that is up in the respiratory system, okay? It's airborne. It travels as an aerosol. It travels as a droplet. It travels on surfaces. It even travels fecal-orally. So you just can't dodge this bullet, okay? You are going to get hit. Now, the good news, 80% of us are already immune because we had coronavirus infections all through our life, and we developed what's called cross immunity. 80% of us have this. Therefore, this hysteria that we need to somehow vaccinate everyone is just plumb stupid. But now let's talk what happens if you're on the regimen. The outcomes, if you have high vitamin D3 running around your system, are much, much better, almost 2 to 3 times better than if you didn't. Okay, the biggest problem that really haunts people with this infection is obesity. Forget the diabetes. Forget for a moment, hypertension. Okay, those impact, but not a hell of a lot. What really impacts COVID is if you're obese and overweight. Do your best to lose weight. And, of course, if you're on a vitamin D3 zinc regimen, that's only going to help. But let's face it, the biggest killer here, the biggest comorbidity, the one that just takes people down time after time after time, is being severely overweight. If you're more than 30 pounds overweight, you need to take care of yourself and start losing weight.
One of the things that doesn't seem to be in any of the news broadcasts, there's been this total lack of discussion about therapeutics, about what we can do to take, like Andy is just talking about, and I take the zinc and the vitamin D and all that stuff too. There's been no discussion of that. It seems like it's either one or the other. Can you give some reasoning that's going along around in the medical practice why this is happening? I would think people would want to say, listen, do this, this, and this, and you're going to improve your chances of not getting it, or at least if you do get it, it'll be a milder case, and you'll survive very happily. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and myself and doctors everywhere are incensed beyond belief about this, okay? In terms of being, we call it therapeutic nihilism. We have been forced into a situation where we get to do nothing and the patients are dying. And this all started because of the emergency use authorization. If you look at the emergency use authorization for vaccines, you absolutely, positively need to have no other alternatives available. And this led to the war on hydroxychloroquine, to the war on ivermectin, to the war on vitamin C, to the war on monoclonal antibodies, to the war on convalescent plasma, which, although it turns out upon testing didn't work. Our hands got tied early on because the powers that be created this situation where we want no alternative so we can have a vaccine.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Is it even a vaccine as we were led, like the kind of vaccines we got as children? Is this really actually a vaccine based on the definition of what we think a vaccine is, what we've been led to believe it is?
In the common term of a vaccine, it sort of is. But they're playing word games because most of our other vaccines are what are called sterilizing vaccines. Okay, they prevent transmission, and they prevent infection. So once I've got my measles, mumps, rubella shot, all right, I am not going to transmit measles, mumps, rubella, and I'm not going to be infected by measles, mumps, rubella. This does not happen with the mRNA jab. Clearly at this point, and you just have to look at Israel, the UK, Gibraltar, and everywhere else on the planet, we're getting breakthrough infections, and the cluster analysis is showing that it's the vaccinated giving it to the vaccinated.
Now, is that because our own immune systems that we build up are actually more powerful than any vaccine that we would take, at least the COVID vaccine that's out there? Is that realistic to state that?
If you pin them down, they're going to tell you that the immunity to the spike protein, right? The COVID virus has what's called a nucleotide capsule, all right? And this little spike protein that sits on it, and everybody's seen the fancy, colorful drawing of the Death Star as it approaches another cell, right? So
yes.
Yeah. So those antibodies are very specific. And even as the virus goes through its natural mutational processes, okay, that spike protein starts to change a little bit and changes just enough to dodge the antibodies. Your normal immune system, when it's confronted with a coronavirus of this kind, generates antibodies not to the spike protein, but mostly to what's called the nucleotide capsid. And this is much, much better immunity than anything that's being given by the virus. Sorry, by the vaccine. In fact, somebody calculated, some epidemiologist worked it out on some latest data, that your immune system is essentially 27 times better at grappling with COVID than when you're vaccinated.
So if you've had this and you've gotten your natural immunity, is there any benefit from getting this jab?
Probably not, especially if you're immune. the only folks that truly seem to benefit, and even there, there are big question marks, because then I'll get to the at what cost piece later. But when you vaccinate the over 70, those with truly serious comorbidities, they seem to be getting a survival advantage on the numbers. But I'm a little iffy, because there are other considerations in play here other than some of these pure numbers that they're throwing at us. And believe me, all the current numbers are very, very suspect. All right, we're being gaslit in many directions. So, you know, what the denominators are in some of the fractions they throw at us, I am not so sure that all those numbers are correct.
So let me ask you this, Doctor. So if you have had COVID and you've got your antibodies and everything else, will you continue to test positive for COVID? So if you go and get a test, maybe, you know, you're 100% well, everything else like that, you've been tested, you got the COVID antibodies, and somebody tests you, would you test positive for COVID at that point through some of the testing?
You will not test positive in perpetuity, but remember, the PCR test is a joke. I mean, 97% false positives as it is presently being used. So the idea that you can be tested for this and get a rational answer is a little silly. Is there a test?
I remember early on when this virus started, and at that time I had a large number of employees. So one of my employees had gotten COVID. He was tested. He had COVID. He recovered fine. He was out for about 2 weeks. He was fine. But we had all our employees gave blood tests to check to see if anybody else had it because of the contact nature of where he was in work. And, of course, nobody had shown it up. Is that blood test type of the better way to go than these tests? You go in, they swab your nose and do the test. Is there a test that you should take if you think you've had COVID that would be more accurate and reliable and tell you if you have antibodies or if you had the virus?
Well, not really. You can take some of the antibody tests, and those will give you a sort of better than a coin flip.
So what you're saying is there's really no way to accurately
testing for it. And we don't really have accurate tests. Part of the scamdemic portion of this insanity, all right, is the fact that we used an inappropriate test in the very worst way.
So while we're during the pause, I want to remind our listeners that if you've got any questions about COVID, anything at all, please call us at 888-329-3306. This is an opportunity to get straight talk about all aspects of COVID, its treatment, its prevention, and what you can do if you think you're sick. Doctor, I have this question. There is a whole litany of companies and universities and schools that are trying to force their employees or students to get the vaccine. And if they refuse to get the vaccine, they want them to continue getting periodic, like weekly or more PCR tests under the theory, I guess, that they may be able to prevent the spread by catching it by using this unreliable test, which does not distinguish between COVID or any other viral infection. It might be picking up pieces of viral, I guess, components of. And so much so that the FDA has itself determined it's not reliable. And I believe that as of December, they're bringing online a different test, which is supposed to be able to discriminate. Can you explain to me, is there any efficacy at all in these repeated PCR tests? And I'd like you to also address the EO, the ethylene oxide component on the swab. While you're doing this, I know this sounds like a typical press question to a politician, which you're definitely not.
0.9 or 9, right? So technically, what?
But we lost you there, Doc.
Then are at risk. So I'm testing, for example, all of Boston University with 18,000 students to see if I can catch the one person that might be at risk. Are we out of our minds?
So, Doc, I think we have a question.
No,
we have a question coming in. Are you ready for a call, Doc?
Hit me.
All right. Malka, you're on the air. What's your question?
Okay. I had COVID, very light case, back in November. I was tested blood work-wise since December, January, until recently showing antibodies and immunity. The last blood test that I did recently shows negative, not positive immunity. Does this mean I should be concerned? I'm in the age group of the above 70.
Okay. You should not be concerned, all right, because you got your immunity the natural way, which means that even though you're not showing antibodies at this point, you have things that are called B memory cells and other T cells that do remember the COVID. All right? So you are fine relative to most of the variants. You'll be okay. Now, you have to remember, you're still at risk for pneumonia. What kills human beings over 70 more than anything else? Pneumonia from influenza. All right? So, you know, just because COVID's not going to get you, something else might. But that, in terms of COVID, sleep well. You're not going to get it again.
So if I keep up with my vaccination, and I was vaccinated for, or got the shot for pneumonia, I think there are two shots. Don't remember when I got the last one. How often should you get it? And if you do have it, you did get it, does that mean that you are okay?
You are about as well protected right now as any senior can be.
Way to go, Malcolm.
Class D and zinc.
Yes.
Plus zinc and all the rest of the good supplements.
Yes, absolutely.
She'd even be safe at Obama's birthday party, it sounds like.
Yes. Okay,
she would be safe anywhere.
And Dan. Okay.
You're
anyway,
doing great.
I want to say hello to Dan, Vicky, Stan, Andy, and thank you, Doctor. This is so wonderful information. I'll continue to listen.
Doctor, I have a question going off of what you had just shared with Malka. The memory cells and the T cells, how are they affected by the vaccine? If you have these memory cells and T cells, are they affected by the vaccine, first of all?
Oh, yes, they are.
In what way?
Something is going on where it seems, okay? Now, we're not 100% certain, okay, and there's a big debate going on behind the scenes in medicine about this. But the suspicion is that you are trading lesser spike protein immunity for your previous greater nucleotide-style immunity. And if that is truly the case, then vaccination means, at least for those that had previous immunity, bad news, because it means they're on the perpetual booster cycle. So we'll see what happens. We'll know these answers soon because these questions are being asked behind the scenes.
So what is this thing that you hear about the vaccine propagating a potential cytokine storm if you actually contact COVID in the natural environment after getting the vaccine?
Okay, this is a general concern with mRNA jabs in all mammalian species.
So first explain what a cytokine storm is.
Sure. A cytokine storm is when your body overreacts drastically to the infection and starts generating lots of chemical messengers. All these chemical messengers are inflammatory. It's a runaway reaction. It's a hurricane storm in your body.
Wow.
And you basically die not from the disease that hit you, but from the overshoot of the immune system.
Okay, so it's an immune overshoot, and some people believe that the COVID, quote, vaccines may cause that. Is that accurate?
Yes, this is a concern that has always existed with mRNA jabs. There are many, many studies where the test animals, when they encountered the virus, just up and died. All of them. So it was very bad.
Isn't that also why they pulled...
Let me ask this, Vicky. Do you think, doctor, if they eliminated you're not allowed to sue any of these medical companies for the virus for liability, do you think this vaccine would be out there?
Absolutely not. At the end of the day, if you look at the vaccine adverse event system, it's the quietest system on earth, okay? It generally has maybe 20, 30 dead per year in it and maybe 1,000 adverse events associated with all the vaccines that you are commonly familiar with. All of a sudden, we have the mRNA jab, and the next thing you know, I got 13,000 dead in there and about 500,000 adverse events. Now, obviously, not all of those are caused by the vaccine. It was just accidental timing. But that's one hell of a big signal. What the hell are we doing? With that kind of stuff, lawyers would be all over a class action lawsuit like white on rice. So something's going on.
Now, if I recall, there were only about 40-some dramatic adverse reactions to the swine flu vaccine, and they pulled that off the market. How is it possible that all these thousands of deaths and other adverse reactions are being reported, and they're not only not pulling this off the market, they're trying to force it on us?
Yes, absolutely. So just as vaccines make no sense through age probably 50, maybe for certain through age 24, you probably have to vaccinate, I don't know, somewhere on the order of 5,000-6,000 in order to prevent one case, maybe, and to prevent one death, you probably have to vaccinate, I don't know, probably 50,000. So it makes no sense in the young folk to do this. And like I said, it only makes some degree of sense in the elderly. But there was a death spike when we first started vaccinating guys, you know. And, you know, that death spike has never been explained. It has never been properly quantified. And we continuously hear about places which suddenly vaccinate everybody, and suddenly 4 out of 10 seniors drop over. So if there's an issue here and they're not properly going through it.
I want to take us back to a little bit of talking about the aerosols and mask wearing.
Sure.
So with the type of air, you know, the size of this particular COVID, is there any reason why children should be masked?
None whatsoever. We must do something for the children. You know, basically children are bulletproof. I mean, I don't know how many months passed without a single child dying in the whole United States from this. And the few that have had serious comorbidities like leukemia, all right? Something was going to get the poor child. All right, but let's talk your normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill rapscallion, you know, getting into trouble, you know, in second grade. There's no reason to put a mask on this kid. None whatsoever. And plus, masks don't work in general. If masks in general worked, why would a biosafety lab 4 need people to get into spacesuits?
Right. That was a question that was brought up as far as the children entering in. One other thing, too, especially in this area, we had quite a few people who I just lost my train of thought. But when it comes to the mask, they are creating these health safety plans for students, K through 12. And they're trying to base these health safety plans on case numbers of adults. Do you think that that is a fair way of determining how a health safety plan for school districts should be created?
It's absolutely plumb stupid. Okay? At the end of the day, the kids are bulletproof. They don't need a safety plan. It doesn't even make sense to have a safety plan because they're not at risk.
Correct. And yet the school districts are doing that when the other thing, too, that they're doing, they were asked, OK, so most of the school districts opened up masked optional, and the kids had come in and the teachers were making the kids who did not have masks put masks back on, and the children then took them off. And so parents are asking a lot of questions as to you know, what can we do to protect our children when the school district is making these rules based off of adult case studies and not what the children are actually dealing with on a regular basis? Because especially the special education students who have to read faces and the teacher's interaction with those children, they have to be able to see the child's reaction, what the children look like. So in your thought process, do you think it's more detrimental for these children, especially at the lower grade levels, where there is no vaccine, that, you know, they're looking at pushing onto these children, which, again, there is no reason to do that. But do you see that it's more, again, what they're creating, the solution is more detrimental than what the benefit is to the children with wearing masks?
If we're going to talk benefit cost, all right, there is zero benefit, so it's all cost. So none of it makes any sense. And yes, you're absolutely right. Young children, all right, especially, say, fifth grade and below, are spending a very long time learning each other's social signals. And let's face it, looking at another human being's face tells you a lot. And they need to learn exactly what the different expressions mean. And you can't be covering up two-thirds of your facial muscles with a mask and learn that. You know, already we have probably socially stunted kids as a side effect of having covered them in masks 8 hours a day.
Psychologically, it's been a big, big insult. Absolutely. To normal development and normal relating.
And what about...
By the way... I wanted to just add one thing with the mask, just to be aware. It's a 2-micron pore, and the virus is a 0.125 micron particle. So it can't block the virus. So there's no point.
And right now...
No one seems to know that.
And is there any mask out there right now that would be able to stop it other than what you had said with the full hazard?
So the short answer is...
We can't hear you.
No, that was the answer. There is no answer. It doesn't work.
The short answer is no answer. I want to ask this question.
Okay, so now let's talk about wearing a mask properly, okay? As a general rule, even if you wear it properly, so what? At the end of the day, you are not going to protect yourself from a viral particle that is running around in aerosols at millions of particles per available liter of air. Do you think it's not going to land on somebody's eye? Are we going to wear goggles in perpetuity along with the safest N99.9 mask, which are extraordinarily expensive? Okay, and will that actually prevent infection? No. If you go down 2 mask levels to N95 masks, you remember those? They're the ones that a lot of carpenters wear, et cetera, to protect themselves from dust particles.
And paint.
Remember those?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And paint. Okay. So we're going to talk Bavaria and Germany. So basically, in Bavaria, they didn't pretty much decide to wear N95 masks. But Germany said, we are going to wear N95 masks. And so what ended up happening is at different points in time, Germany and Bavaria were wearing N95 masks. Guess what? The curves in the two areas were exactly the same in terms of infections and fatalities. So you tell me, do N95 masks help in any way whatsoever? No, they don't. So, and, of course, we have that pesky place called Sweden,
right.
All right, where they did absolutely nothing.
They're doing great.
And the pandemic came and the pandemic went, just as it was going to do anyway.
So, Dr. Silvitz, I watched a documentary last evening that dealt with something almost identical to what we're going through now. It had a different name, and it happened roughly 100 years ago. They called it the Spanish flu, but apparently it was invented at Fort Detrick in the United States. They had masking. They had a an injection that they used. I think 30 to 50 million people worldwide died from the Spanish flu. And they had the same kind of propaganda that we're going through now. The masks didn't work then. Their vaccine seemed to help people die or didn't work back then. And we're being told exactly the same things. It's like a reproduced version of what happened in 1918 to 1920 with the so-called Spanish flu. So it's amazing how history repeats itself and the same stupid stuff happens over and over again. You can't stop a virus with a piece of cloth, clearly.
One other thing I want
to...
What was that?
Just to let people know, the head of the government back in the United States at that time was a very progressive liberal by the name of Woodrow Wilson, who actually, in effect, the Spanish flu actually started prior to 1919 in the 1916 and 17 area, and he suppressed all information about it because he didn't want to affect the turn toward getting United States into the war. So just remember the type of people that were running the government at the time, kind of similar to the type of people that are running the government today.
I have one other question about the mask and being the mama bear that I am. For pregnant women, there was a study that recently came out, and it said that children that were born during the pandemic have a lower mental capacity than children previous or hopefully soon after. Can you talk a little bit about what it is, how it affects the unborn child for a pregnant woman to be wearing a mask?
That's a very good question, and unfortunately, I cannot speak to that with appropriate authority, other than to say that your report is accurate, as far as I know, and that something about this pandemic, probably being locked in away from proper social interaction, possibly some slight decrease in total oxygen delivery to the child, might have played a role in this. But pregnant women should, for all intents and purposes, consider themselves not at great risk of COVID. And as a general rule, despite what the CDC says, and I'll take them to task on it any day of the week, they should not be taking the vaccine.
So we're coming down to our last few minutes, and I want to give a shout-out real quickly to Western Pennsylvania listeners of ours who I'm working with, both very brave patriots who are standing up to their governmental employers who want to force the vaccine on them, or periodic testing, weekly testing, and or a religious exemption to even be able to just go to the testing. So Shane and Dana, we're thinking of you today, and we want you to know that we're behind you, and we don't want you to back down and stand tall, and even if you have to take a hit, it's better to find an employer who's rational than to work for somebody that's going to cause you to do something that's harmful to yourself, either by taking the vaccine, by forcing you to do something you don't want to do, or taking that test with the ethylene oxide. And, Doc, you never did address the ethylene oxide question, so I want to give you that opportunity now.
There's no question that there's ethylene oxide in it's a common sterilant, sterilizing agent. We use it all across medicine. The amount and dosing associated with testing is microscopic. It has no true effect on anyone. The only reason I would ever be cautious is if they start testing me every damn week. At a certain point, it's like, okay, now my exposure is going to amount to something. Can you please stop it with the weekly testing? Because let's face it, the test gives you half random results anyway. All it's picking up is an elevated immune system.
They were doing that to our children in the sports arena last year for the amount of time. So it was a month and a half that they were testing asymptomatic children every week with that test.
Yeah, it's the most stupid thing on earth. The simple truth is there's no such thing as an asymptomatic carrier of COVID. Okay, that was a gigantic illusion created by the false PCR.
Yeah. One other thing before we leave. I noticed recent articles
regarding the disease needs to get out there and basically start talking, because they know that there is no such thing as an asymptomatic carrier of the infection, all right? There are perisymptomatic and there are symptomatic carriers, but there's no such thing as an asymptomatic infective carrier. You just can't get it from an asymptomatic person. We have two gigantic studies, and basically they concluded that COVID transmission asymptomatic is nil.
So there's no reason to take the test. We're down to our last 45 seconds, and I want to thank Dr. Robert Silverts and his wife, Lorraine, who's a master's in social work, for joining us on Jump Back Down today with Stan Casaccio, Vicki Lightcap, and today me, Andy Teitelman, standing in, well, not standing in because Stan's here, but guest hosting anyway and having a lot of fun doing it. We had a great time today, and Doc and Lorraine, you got to come back again because we can't finish the COVID. There's so many more things to talk about, and we do want to address that therapeutic modality. Can you tell us what that was called again? I can never remember it.
Therapeutic nihilism, doing nothing?
No. What you do for the veterans.
Hydroxychloroquine?
No, the electronic, the magnetic therapy. That
oh,
you do.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, individualized transcranial magnetic stimulation. Anytime.
Yeah, I wonder why I can't remember that.
It was great having you guys. Yeah. Great being a guest.
Thank you. Everyone have a great week.
Yes.
Talk to you all later.
We look forward to the next
have a great holiday, everybody.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yes, thanks to all of you. Bye-bye.